Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be back after a few weeks off here.
Yeah, between traveling and just general, Dan and I do have lives outside of writing, believe it or not, and those things sometimes get in the way, but you know what? I think that this is a great week to kind of jump back into things because Syracuse fans have an awful lot to talk about right now.
Yeah, I mean, we had a couple of lean weeks there. Just happened to work out where they weren't. They're the week that we took off, but plenty to going on now, which is fun. Obviously, we didn't know that we were going to be getting an athletic director come Friday or Saturday night, but it worked out, and then timing worked out well for this podcast. So excited to get into it because I think we are all pretty excited about how the whole search turned out.
Agreed. For those who thought anything different, today's episode will mostly cover new Syracuse athletic director Mark Coyle. For those who didn't get to check out our, wouldn't call it an exclusive interview because it wasn't that, but we had one of the kind of coveted media slots to start off his tenure. So not day one officially, but the day he was announced, we did get to chat with him for a few minutes. So for those who didn't see that, go check out the short Q&A over on newsmagician.com. But Dan, right off the bat, what was your initial reaction when you saw not only that we had named an athletic director on a late Friday night, but, you know, the fact that we got someone from Boise State who I think all of us had just kind of assumed was out of our his range of influence.
I was pretty excited. It was a guy who his name had come up probably early on. I'm not sure if we listed him in the post that we did, but he was definitely like a guy who had been floated around, but he definitely didn't seem like someone that was an obvious connection for SU. But at first blush, and even and since, I've been pretty much all on board. I think he's the right kind of hire for where Syracuse is and what we're coming out of in terms of our last athletic director. Not to attach aspersions on Dr. Groves, but I think he spent the time that he was hired pretty well for certain reasons, and I think Coyle does the same thing coming off of all the issues that run up in the last year or so.
Absolutely agree. I think, you know, the main things that that Chancellor Sivaruta kind of spelled out as the search was getting started were, you know, the academic sanctions, so really like compliance focus, fixing football in general, just making sure that everything, the Olympic sports, stayed moving forward. And I think Coyle, based on both his resume at Boise State, you know, leading them through some compliance issues that he had nothing to do with, but still had kind of inherited football. Obviously, he didn't get them to their stature now, but very much led them, you know, into still being the premier kind of non-power team in this new playoff era. And then, you know, Boise in general, academics, increased. Under his watch, and you know, they're non-traditional sports. I mean, Boise before a few years ago was really only known for football, and since you see an increase in success for women's sports, other non-revenue sports. Men's basketball is suddenly a perennial tournament contender in a tough Mountain West Conference. So this, to me, as well as you and a lot of other fans, really kind of checks all the boxes in a way that I'm not sure any other candidate out there would have, and I guess the fact that we didn't necessarily see him as viable or see him as, I think viable, reachable is probably the right word. It's kind of indicative of how poorly the last year has treated Orange fans in particular.
Yeah, and I think when we were looking at people who fill this role, there was kind of a natural bias toward people with a Syracuse or Central New York experience. And now that I think about it, I'm kind of intrigued by Coyle coming in with very little connection to Syracuse before he was hired, obviously. Because I think coming from Boise and being an Iowa guy, I think there's enough of a similar cultural connection there where he's not going to I think there's a good chance he ends up understanding and getting what the Syracuse fan base is all about. But he's not going to be kind of shaded toward the things that he's experienced in the past because he isn't a Syracuse person. It's kind of similar to Subaru. He comes from very different backgrounds, so he can kind of look at things objectively and not worry about kind of the minutiae that Syracuse fans can get caught up in sometimes. So I think he fits culturally better than Dr. Gross did for a lot of reasons, but he also won't get bogged down, I don't think, by like the little things. I think I was impressed by his introduction, and I'm kind of excited to see what he does in his first few months and how it's going to differ from what we're used to and how he builds on some of the good things that Chris did.
Right. No, I think that's pretty spot on. We talked about this kind of internally, and I even asked Coyle when I spoke to him on Monday, similarities-wise, I think first and foremost, the kind of local pro team angle is something that he seems to understand. I mean, to what degree, I guess we'll find out. But like you said, the fact that he doesn't have any kind of preconceptions of Syracuse and Sacred Cows, other than, you know, the Dome and Jim Boeheim, it seems like overall he very much wants to honor what's here while also making sure that some of the mistakes of the past are not repeated. And I think that is, you know, similar to Subaru's, I think they have a lot in common there. It is something much needed, much valued for those of us kind of, you know, anxious to see what happens over the next 5 to 10 as Syracuse enters a new era. Not that the pool of power schools really shrank, it only shrank by about two from the last kind of reshuffling, but you know, there's a lot more money at stake now than there used to be. There's a lot more influence at stake than there used to be. I think this is a critical point for the Orange Athletic Program, especially football, but I'd say everybody all around, to figure out their place in the world. And odds seem stacked against us to rise, to the top in sports that aren't, you know, lacrosse and basketball. But at the same time, you never really know. This is college athletics, and things can turn on a dime for those who are not at the very, very top or very, very bottom of any sport.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice to have a guy coming from a place like Boise where obviously he didn't build the football program, so you can give him credit for the Harsin hire, and he maintained it. But it seems like as an entire athletic department, they got a lot done with the Mountain West resources. And in a place where I bet Boise, Idaho is not that far off from what Syracuse, New York is like in terms of the sports landscape and what the university means to the greater city. So obviously there are many issues with Gross. They're all very well, they've talked about all the time. Apparently Coyle has a pretty good background as a fundraiser, and it seems like he might be a guy who's more efficient with how he spends and how he improves the program. So I'm pretty excited to see what he does. And while, he didn't build the football program, he did kind of build a pretty decent basketball program in a very short amount of time. The Boise State basketball team is pretty decent now, at least as far as Mountain West programs go. So it's not like he didn't totally put his mark on Boise in 3 years. Like, he did change things and he did improve areas. So it's I think it's a pretty it's going to be interesting to see how it goes forward. And I think a lot of basketball fans will be excited to hear that a lot of the Boise fans who weren't that upset about him leaving thought that he was too basketball focused. So I think the balance in terms of his interests might actually be a pretty decent one for the more basketball oriented Syracuse fans. Although obviously I hope he puts his early efforts into football, because you know we talk about that all the time. We both agree that football needs to drive the bus here.
Right, and I think you brought up a very good point that I hadn't even really considered, is that, you know, while football is a specialty, basketball is something that he showed himself to be very adept at. I mean, Boise State was really much a non-contender in the WAC before they moved to the Mountain West. And in a very short amount of time, they went from kind of bottom feeder to, you know, conference contender. I mean, last year they tied for the regular season conference title before losing out to San Diego State, who's kind of the king of the hill out west for an extended amount of time at this point. But, you know, it does go to show that with just a little bit of, effort and some, it seems like marketing acumen, but not in the same way that Gross did it. He was able to build a lot in a short amount of time. I think, like you said, football needs to drive the bus. And I think between everything he said, everything Sievert said, it seems like he understands just how important football is. I mean, the fact that he gave what seemed like a pretty extensive interview with Andrew Adelson over at ESPN's ACC football blog, just on football, to me kind of spoke volumes about the task at hand for him and his keen understanding of that, both internally and externally, in terms of the SU fan base. Dan, you're on mute.
Oh, sorry, I was totally muted. No, I totally agree. I just think overall, I can't. There, it's weird because usually you'd be able to pick out like one thing that you know, that isn't great about a hire. This one, it really seems to check off all the boxes we were looking for, which is rare to say. And maybe the biggest concern is like he's moved around a lot, and people might be worried that if like the Kentucky AD job opens up, which doesn't seem like it should in the next couple of years, he leaves. But it'll be kind of the same thing when we talk about hiring football coaches and that we've experienced with Marone. You know, he's not going to get a better job than Syracuse unless he does some big things here. So I think you take that as it comes, and it could end up being where he just sits around for a long time. So really not a lot to dislike about this hire, at least from what we've heard and what we've seen so far. And all the reports out of Boise, aside from some people who thought he was too basketball-oriented, which seems kind of like a silly thing when the football team went to the Fiesta Bowl last year. Most of the reviews have been, like, absolutely fantastic. So it seems like we made I think Kent Sifu did an A for the tire, at least based on what we know so far.
True. And you mentioned that, you know, no one has a problem with the hire, could find a bad thing to say about him. And that thought was kind of echoed. I know Sean was on ESPN Syracuse today, and that was kind of the prevailing sentiment, was that, you know, no one could find a bad thing to say about the guy. And I think part of that is because it really was a great hire. And like you said, a solid A for Chance Receiver on the hire. But it's also because of kind of how rough the last year's been on SU fans. And I think, you know, that can kind of change your perception very quickly. I mean, you look at SU football fans, while after 2012, a 7-6 record in 2013 seemed like a disappointment. After 2014, a 7-6 record would seem like a blessing. And that's kind of the fan base. That's kind of just how college sports work. Riffing a little bit on this topic still, Dan, what is the one thing that you would like to see Mark Coyle address first and foremost, like in his first? I know, like, I asked this question of him, and he just didn't have an answer yet, and I don't blame him for that, to be honest. But if if you were to spell out like the one thing that he accomplished in his first 60 to 90 days on the job, what would you like it to be? Dan, you muted again.
God damn it. So I, as I was saying to no one, because I keep on muting myself and forgetting, I hope he doesn't rush into anything. I hope that he takes a couple months before we get into like August and get close to the football season beginning to really evaluate everything and learn as much as he can, which I don't think is something that Dr. Gross probably did when he decided to retire 4 months into his tenure. But I hope he learns as much as he can about Syracuse, watch all the documentaries, and talk to Floyd Little as many times as he can. But I think the first most pressing issue is probably having some clarity on the Mike Hopkins situation. I think most Syracuse fans want to see Hop take over. I think it's pretty clear that Boeheim wants to see Hop take over, which I think his opinion is valued here, considering he's been working with Hopkins hands-on for a couple decades now. Hopkins is a top five, top 10 recruiter in the country, so I think he's earned it. And it might be natural for Coyle to want to make his mark with a big basketball hire in a couple of years, but I think he would win a lot of points with Syracuse fans if he figured out, I mean, assuming it's something that Hop and Boeheim both still want, getting the succession plan right away, at least best he can 3 years or so before Boeheim actually retires. So getting some clarity there, I think, would definitely be my first wish from him.
That's fair. And to be honest, I know that, you know, a lot of people are going to say that. I probably would say that just because I think that that's kind of, you know, the cloud hanging over SU fans overall is the basketball program still has some sanctions to deal with. It doesn't have a postseason ban to deal with, but the Boeheim suspension, the lost scholarships, the probation, there's still plenty of things standing in the way. And I think the one issue that would at least help us in terms of, okay, we're still going to be all right with recruits, et cetera, would be a move to kind of solidify our future of the program, especially as, you know what, Northeast jobs keep coming open and as do Southern California jobs. And with those in mind, like, you can't help but wonder how much longer Hopkins can sit around without any guarantees. I mean, at some point you have to act in your own self-interest. And I would not blame him for looking around without that guarantee, you know, kind of in writing from the sitting athletic director. But looking for originality here and moving away from that answer, I think, and this will sound cliche to anyone who reads what I write, you know what? Setting up the next like 4 to 5 years of football schedules would be perfect right about now. I mean, obviously, we're not going to be completely devoid of other power programs. That's impossible based on the ACC's scheduling mandate. You have to have a Power 5 team on the schedule every year outside of the conference. I know I mentioned this in the comments the other day, but to me, I mean, Notre Dame's on roughly every 4 years. I think a rotation of West Virginia, Penn State, and Maryland would be great. And then maybe, you know, just kind of identifying, you know, whether it's Vanderbilt or like somebody else who's just not exactly up on their luck would be great to kind of plug in those years that those schools don't come through. I know not easier said than done, but we do have Maryland on a future schedule. Penn State is not on a future schedule right now, and that's going to prove to be difficult. Based on the scheduling, how far in advance they're scheduling. West Virginia, same deal. They're kind of looking at Pitt, if any team, in their non-conference schedule. But if we can ID those three, it's kind of a nice rotation in future years. I certainly wouldn't mind that. I could say the 44 controversy, but I think that as much as it sucks to see that kind of PR black eye that we've been dealing with for a while, I think that some on-field things could be a little bit more pressing, especially as, you know, you said yourself, Dan, you know, don't rush into things, especially with 44. Let's but just kind of let them lie and see what happens next, and don't just decide, like, I'm on campus, I have to do something about 44 for positive or negative.
Yeah, and I was encouraged when he said that he was going to wait to talk to Floyd. As someone who wants the 244 on the field, it certainly seems like Floyd is going to guide him in that direction. And he, you know, didn't say he was always to call Jim Brown about it. So I think we'll probably see, and obviously, like, Pete Sala seems to be on board with it being on the field, and he's, you know, just got a big promotion today, coming off of his interim streak here. So it seems like the people that he'll listen to are probably more pro 44 than anti. So I'm not overly worried about that getting reverted or getting further muddled. But I do hope we hear about that eventually once he's comfortable with the issue. But I think, like you said, the football schedules would be great. Obviously, that's probably not a pet peeve for, like, the more casual fans, but it definitely is for us. But, yeah, it'd be nice to lock off, like, a couple Indianas or Vanderbilts or whoever is struggling for some of those power conference slots. But I think it's almost as important to see if we can even get a couple two-for-ones or get some of these valuable non-conference slots so we don't have to worry about doubling up on SEC schools or doing the whole 1AA dance two times in a year or whatever. I think, you know, getting the power conference teams is important, but I think power conference teams are always going to be looking for each other. And unfortunately, where Syracuse is now, I don't think that'll be as hard for us to schedule, even for, like, a weaker school who might think, hey, Syracuse is that weak school they can go play. But I think, like, the FIUs and the FAUs of the world are going to get gobbled up real quick. So if we can start putting together some of these not that far away out-of-conference schedules, like you said, that'd be great, even if it's not just, like, dumped all on us at once. But luckily, we have an AD now that has a lot of experience in scheduling for both sports. So just another thing that he seems to fill that we that's been a major concern for a lot of SU fans.
Yep, and I mean, obviously, like you said, while the casual SU fan might not be big on scheduling, it does have a huge factor, and something that Coyle alluded to himself in the press conference, in part because of a question prompted by Syracuse.com's Chris Carlson. Make sure to shoot me a note after laughing about the fact that he asked about the schedule. I think, while everyone's talked about it for a while, our obsession with it on the site has at least brought it a little bit more into the limelight, probably in the last couple of years. So we'll see what happens there. I know I've heard some mentions of Duke-type scheduling, which would be perfect. Again, let's start locking up the valuable and viable non-power programs as we can, because, you know, whether it's the schools in Florida or the schools in Georgia or Virginia or North Carolina, we should really be looking for either two-for-ones with MAC schools or some of the worst Sun Belt schools, or we should be going for one-for-ones in places where we don't get to play as often, whether that's with ODU or, you know, Florida Atlantic or Florida International, Georgia State. Like, these are just no-brainers, and it's the type of thing where it's confusing to a lot of fans why we're not getting these teams on the schedule. And for the more casual fan that might not care right now, like, you're going to if you wait too much longer and the schedule is littered with, you know, more difficult non-power schools like Marshall, or we have to, you know, head out to Washington or, like, whatever it is. There's definitely some value in getting your schedule done as quickly as possible. Pivoting on scheduling a little bit before we hit halftime, Syracuse basketball added another team to the schedule today. Montana State, which was uneventful at first until I know one commenter, Orange Man, Fighter of the Night Man, did point out the fact that anytime SU has faced a Montana school in basketball, we have proceeded to make the Final Four. We've only faced a Montana school twice ever in program history. Montana State in the 1996 NCAA tournament, Obviously, we made the Final Four that year. And then in the 2013 NCAA tournament, we faced Montana. And we also made a Final Four that season. So based on that, we're obviously going to the Final Four. We don't even need to play the games. Right, Dan?
I don't think the numbers lie. I think that's the takeaway I have.
I mean, it is irrefutable right now. Maybe not by the end of his season, but right now, that is irrefutable.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, I have no reason to believe that we won't go to the Final Four this year. I've not seen or heard anything that will shake my unwavering belief that this is a Final Four team for the Syracuse Orange. Don't talk about last year being disappointing or Team Christmas being gone or anything else. The Montana school thing is one of the hallmarks of the program.
Yep. Thanks, Montana State Bobcats.
Are this a Bobcats? I had no idea what they were. I kind of assumed they were
Bobcats.
The Grizzlies or the Bears or whatever Montana is. Like they just
Grizzlies too. So yeah,
also,
so we just feel also we field two programs. We just kind of pick teams before the season starts, and then we rotate it out once a week. And
there
the Grizzlies, me also Grizzlies.
There are only so many basketball players in the state of Montana. We have very limited options with how to handle this.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that's actually how it worked.
Is Morgan State also in Montana?
Are they?
No, they're in Maryland. Never mind. They're also in Maryland.
I
was kind of hoping they were also in Montana.
I thought Morgan State was in the MEAC. I was like, that's a stretch from Montana.
Oh, God. I really hope Seth Davis chooses Montana State to win that game.
Oh, that'd be the best. He won't even pay attention to it. He's scarred for life in terms of Syracuse versus Montana team.
He's also too busy shilling his mom's green juice on Twitter. He won't watch that team.
Oh, God. All right. So on that note, it's halftime. And since it's been a few weeks, we have a lot of beer to talk about, including some beer that Dan and I got to consume at the same time in the same place.
Different glasses, luckily.
Yeah, different glasses. No Lady and the Tramp beer consumption on this end.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm going through what I haven't had. I have to, like, weed out some of these beers that are less exciting.
Welcome to my every week, Dan.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll take it off, I guess. In the last couple weeks, I got to try Omegang's latest Game of Thrones beer, the Three Eyed Raven, which is, hold on, what do they classify this? It's Saison. It's like a really dark Saison, but it's really nice flavor. Doesn't really hit you over the head with anything too much. It's really well balanced, I think. Super drinkable. I know we talked about how Saisons can run like good and bad. I think this is one of the better ones I've had, actually. So that was nice. All the Game of Thrones stuff aside, too. Like, just a really good beer without the gimmick. We both had Mexican Cake from Westbrook Brewing a couple weeks ago, which was fantastic.
Jesus, that beer was good.
It was very good. I'm not a huge stout drinker, but this just really, like, went down so well. Wasn't overpowering. Just a really, delicious drink, but didn't have, like, it didn't linger like stouts sometimes do. It was 10.5 alcohol by volume, which is, you don't have to drink something that's high alcohol just for the hell of it, but this worked really nicely. Just a really good beer. I have no idea where to find it. That was the first time I had even heard of it, but highly recommended. So thanks to Aaron Goldfarb for that one, who was also with us at the time. I had same night, Peeper Ale from Maine Brewing, which you recommended, which was fantastic, at our second stop in New York City. Just a pretty standard pale ale, but really delicious. See what else. I had Hop State New York from Omegang, which was good. Let me get
more recent. Yesterday, or not yesterday, but earlier this week, I was actually kind of disappointed by it. I tried the Tangier, which is a Southern Tier Brewing, one of my favorite breweries, a session IPA from them, which is a little bit outside of what they normally do, but they do have some good IPAs. This is a session IPA that's brewed with tangerine peel, so I was kind of excited about it. And I don't know if I just didn't get a great batch of it. The first bottle I had in the six-pack was definitely not as good as some of the other ones, but just for whatever reason, it seemed like way overhopped for a session IPA. Didn't get a lot of the tangerine flavor. Wasn't all like, it just didn't seem like it really worked. That wasn't my favorite, but it was from a Build Your Own Fifth Pack. The other half of it I filled with Honey Spot Road White IPA from Two Roads, which is one of my favorite beers that they do. Really delicious. Kind of brings the best of both worlds from the white and the IPA side of things. Can't recommend that one enough. And then on Monday, I had Stones Enjoy by July 4th. Really good. Yes, a couple IPA-heavy weeks, but if you can get your hand on that one, that's a super drinkable one. Really enjoyed that. And a lot of these, you know, I'm not the hugest, like, I'm not the biggest hophead, although I do appreciate them. But a lot of these, you know, if you're, you know, someone who isn't generally a huge IPA drinker but want to try to ease yourself into them, they're not, like, super overpowering, but they kind of represent what you can do with them without, like, overloading the bitterness of normal IPAs.
There's fair. And yeah, I actually haven't had Enjoy by 7-4 yet. I'll get around to that. I know it's around all the time here. So I just don't like when I used to like actually rush out to get it. I don't really do as much anymore just because, again, that was around. But I drank quite a bit since the last episode of the show. So I guess I'll just kind of dive in. Stopped over at Russian River Brewing Company up in Santa Rosa, California, before I headed to New York. So got to enjoy their 19-beer flight. Some really excellent beers, obviously, for anyone who's familiar with Russian River. They make such hits as Consecration, Supplication, Pliny the Elder, Blind Pig, Pliny the Younger, which does not get bottled and is only released for a very, very limited audience once a year. But yeah, had a bunch of those. Don't even need to really go through them, I guess, because there was a lot. It was 19 beers, and again, plenty of goodness in there. Some other winners, Other Half Brewing's Hop Showers. Other Half's over in Brooklyn. Hop Showers is a really, really good double IPA. Got to try Logsdon's Session Brett. Really nice bread from Logsdon up in Oregon. Had a super going from Grim Artisan Ales, which is, again, another Brooklyn selection. Mexican Cake is probably my favorite of the week or so. Just a really, really nicely done, you know, Imperial Stout, Bourbon Barreling, Imperial Stout. Nice touches of kind of every flavor in there. Little bit of pepper, some, you know, kind of chocolate coffee notes that you're typically going to get in any sort of stout or porter. So just a really, really nice drink.
I got another one. Yeah,
I think that's really like what makes it so interesting is that like that really subtle kick at the end.
But then it's gone. Like it doesn't stick around and like ruin whatever you're doing after. Like it. You drink it, you get the nice like habanero flavor, but then it doesn't like stick around in your mouth. Like it's out of there, which is good.
Yeah, like I feel like a lot of breweries that like play around with heat sometimes just overdo it a little bit, and I just didn't think this was the case with that one, which was nice. Some others that I had Costa Rican Coffee IPA from Beanery Brewing up in Vermont. Really like kind of interesting clash of styles. I mean, coffee is just not something you associate with an IPA, and yet they did a really, really nice job with it. I was very impressed. Other beers, again, there are a lot of things here. Had white oak from the brewery. It was a wheat wine. Very, very interesting, kind of vanilla-y beer. That's an official term, vanilla-y. An enjoyable one from them. Expatriate IPA from Three Weavers from nearby here in Englewood, as well as Devil's Advocate, sour from Almanac. And the last kind of big highlight, I guess, was Smokey and the Bois from the brewery. Just really, really nice bourbon barrel aged beer from them. Kind of blended their best smoked beers from the brewery, Smoking Wood and Bois Fumé. And I mean, obviously, they're both smoked beers, so they're going to blend well together. But I just really like the combination. Both there. And beyond that, I guess I'll close out with Hello LA. It's a IPA from Highland Park Brewing up in the Highland Park neighborhood of Los Angeles. And that is with sounding pretty over the top.
Yeah, that's what happens when we get a 3-week gap between podcasts.
Too true. Yeah, kind of refocusing. We talked a good amount about the AD. Why don't we talk about this rule change stuff? We can kind of toss around some other ideas too. But I think the rule change that was proposed today, I know you kind of called our attention to it, Dan. For those who didn't see, NCAA is proposing a rule where it would push back the early entry deadline for underclassmen going to the NBA draft, a more thorough evaluation period, actually talk to scouts, actually get an honest to goodness, gut check on whether or not they're really going to be drafted where they think, or if they're going to be drafted at all. It's just kind of helpful for everybody involved, really. I think the NBA gets a better look at these kids. Without having to just like lazily stash them into the D League. I think programs get a better shot at really looking at how the team is constructed for the following year. I think these kids, have the ability now to, well, as long as it passes, to go back to college. If it's something that they want to do, if they're either just not projected where they want to be or not projected at all. Like it's no longer as blind of a decision for them. And I do hope it passes. And I think it'll create a fun atmosphere. Fun is all relative, but a fun atmosphere nonetheless next spring as these underclassmen kind of decide. But I know not everybody thinks that way. I'm assuming you're on the same page though, Dan.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I don't know that it necessarily like needs to be the last step that we take. I think eventually I'd like to just be able to see kids get drafted and go back if they want. They can figure it out. Other sports do it. But obviously that's not the way that college sports evolve. So I think it's not a bad first step. I know you talked to Kevin Wall about it earlier, and he had some apprehension about how effective it will actually be when utilized. And I think there was definitely something to that. A lot of these kids, they might understand that their second round picks at best or aren't going to get drafted, but that's not necessarily the entire reason they're going. Maybe they just really don't like doing schoolwork or they want to go just get paid anywhere, and that's fine. But I do think even if there's like 5 kids a year that get to come back and contribute at the college level, I just think having the option is good, even if it's not even if it's not used as regularly as people may think. I think that the fact that they're giving the student athletes a little bit more control over their own careers is always a good thing, and it's something that the NCAA woefully lacks in a lot of regards. And the fact that the NCAA and the NBA seem all to be on board with this, I'm pretty sure it'll pass. So it's encouraging. It's not like a perfect solution, but it's better than what we have, which is it's good. So I do hope it passes, and I hope that it's not the first step, but I hope it kind of leads on a road to getting somewhere where we can actually, you know, be adults about what college sports are all about and get the right people, you know, funnel the money towards the players who earn it and everything else. But it seems like in the last couple of years, we've actually had some progress in fixing a lot of these issues, and this is just another example. So hopefully it works out. It does seem like it will, because all the right people seem to be in support of it. And I don't know why there wouldn't be support for it. It seems like kind of a no-brainer for both sides.
Right. I mean, the fact that the NCAA worked with the Coaches Association as well as the NBA to put this together does seem like it'll be a no-brainer. It'll pass. But you know, I guess we thought the same thing about the early signing period for football, and that didn't happen. But we shall see. I mean, that self-determination angle is just such a key point here. You know, these kids shouldn't have to make blind decisions. And like Kevin Wall said on the site today, you know, it's not going to change that top, you know, kind of upper crust athletes. Those guys who want to go are going to go. And the guys who are going to finish this lottery or going to finish near the lottery and kind of a crapshoot, like those guys probably aren't going to change their minds based on, you know, just like a couple days of the combine or whatever. But what this does for them is I just think it creates a more informed decision, and it doesn't control that decision either. It allows them to really, you know, sit down with their families and instead of, you know, them hearing whispers from the internet or, you know, shady shoe salesman or whoever it is, like, oh man, you're gonna be a lottery pick. Like, getting to hear from the horse's mouth, because right now they're not allowed to make any contact with NBA personnel. It's just a much, much better situation for them, especially in a sport like basketball where there are only 60 picks every year and everybody else kind of has to fend for themselves. I mean, it's much more critical in the NBA than it is elsewhere, where you have either lots of rounds or lots of different entry points into the league. I think this is a great, great move forward, as you said, but it's step one in what should be a better process in future years.
Yeah, and I think one of the key things that Kevin brought up is that they do need to figure out is how players go about paying for, you know, like he used the example of Christmas, who obviously wouldn't be going back, but it's still the example's valid. You know, he's done like 25 workouts in the last like month and a half, which is insane. And part of that is that he was like, you know, Chad Ford said he was the best player at the combine. Obviously that turns some heads, but that's not always going to be the case. But a lot of these guys are working out for 15, 20 clubs and they need to go to those places and do it. And obviously those flights cost a lot of money, and the new proposal would be that a player can have an agent. So that's kind of a hang up. Obviously, you're going to be behind the eight ball if you're a player that is going to just be the combine and not doing all of the other workouts. But I think they can figure that stuff out. Like you said, it's not a done deal here. It's just, you know, the first step. But it shows that everyone's open to trying to figure things out and make things better for the players, which is a positive, because like 5 years ago, I don't think that was even a consideration.
True indeed. I guess in less positive news, we can switch focus to this, maybe our last topic, depending on how long this runs. So yesterday we got, well, and for those listening to the podcast, it'll be 2 days ago. The bad news that defensive tackle / nose tackle Wayne Williams will be transferring out of the program. While he was never a world beater by any means, this is bad. We don't really have much in terms of depth at the defensive tackle position. And as everyone kind of pointed out, you know, John Raymond is the only player at the defensive tackle slot to take a snap in college thus far. Dan is someone who is usually a little more in tune with what's going on in the trenches. What happens next? Because I'm worried.
you really hope that Stephen Clark is good and the fact that Michigan and Florida recruited him was not a fluke. We see a lot more Oki than we probably would have thought originally. We really hope John Raymond doesn't get hurt. because if he does, we are screwed. It's not good. It's not a good situation. It's not like something that we can overcome, but we're going to be relying on a lot of players that we probably did not expect to be relying on. Raymond is quite literally the only defensive tackle who will have played a snap for college football on the roster right now. We have Chris Slayton, redshirt freshman. We have Peyton Samuels, another redshirt freshman. We have a couple guys coming in as true freshmen, and at least three or four of those guys are probably going to have to play in some capacity. One of them probably will have to start in our base 4-3, but it changes a lot. I mean, defensive tackle, as Schaefer said in the past, is the hardest place to recruit. That kind of bears out by the situation we have now. It doesn't help that we've lost four defensive tackles, I think, this offseason, which is just kind of freakish. I don't know that we were going to have Wayne Williams out there every snap, but if he could have given Syracuse a good 25-30 plays a game, I mean, that would have been huge just as a run defender. John Raymond needs to be everything we thought he could be before the terrible injuries. Otherwise, we're going to be shifting defensive ends inside, which our defensive end group, I think, is interesting, but it's not one that we can really afford to be pushing playmakers into the position where they have to hold the line. It's not great. I will say that out of all the coaches on the staff that I trust to try to work through this and develop players fast, Tim Douse is probably number one. I think he's probably our best position coach. And he's done some wonders with some defensive lines that weren't super talented in the past. So hopefully he can figure it out and Raymond stays healthy and has a big year, because otherwise Syracuse is going to be very vulnerable in the middle.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, it's so problematic, because while the linebacker spot has really helped make the Syracuse blitz game as aggressive and as effective as it's been in previous years, it still doesn't happen without an effective and healthy defensive line. I know we talked about a little bit in the comments and over in the staff chat. It's just, you don't want to have to see Ron Thompson shift inside again when he could just be such an effective defensive end for Syracuse, both in terms of run stopping and pass rush. This throws a wrench into a lot of things. It also, we never wanted to have to throw Stephen Clark and Tyler Cross into the fire as true freshmen, and it seems very, very likely that they do. I know some folks have kind of mentioned that, Clark wasn't in necessarily the toughest league in Alabama. Cross was, I believe, playing in Connecticut. These are guys who, while they could rise to challenge, there's certainly going to be an enormous, enormous step up for them going from what they played in high school to what they're going to be playing by week two, of the Syracuse football season in Wake Forest, a fellow Power Conference school. I definitely see this as a wrench. I don't think it's a death knell, but, like you said, if one guy goes down, whether that's, John Raymond in particular, if he goes down, I don't like what happens next. But I think Caden Samuels is kind of in the same boat. I know Samuels hasn't taken a snap, but at the same time, he is a very, very, very good and rising player based on all feedback we've heard from spring practice, at least. Losing any of those guys at this point is incredibly problematic for us.
Yeah, cannot afford injuries there. And unfortunately, Raymond, obviously we all hope the best for him. We hope he has an incredible season. He's very injury prone. And he had a really freak injury 2 years ago. It's kind of miraculous that he's even playing. So obviously it's no fault of his own, but it's not exactly the guy that you would probably want to put your money on staying healthy the whole year, especially when he's going to be commanding double teams all the time. So hopefully Clark or Cross or one of these other guys can really emerge as a useful player. And I do have hope for them down the road, but it's asking a lot of anyone to step in and play against an ACC schedule, a defensive tackle, when you were just in high school a couple months ago. So we'll see how it plays out. At least Syracuse will be able to tell defensive linemen over the next couple of years that if you can play on the inside, you can come play right away, especially next year and the year after. Because not a lot of guys there, and most of the linemen that we have are pure defensive ends. But, the fact that we're moving Ron Thompson inside at all is kind of crazy. He's not a defensive tackle build-wise, but he kind of made it work last year, similar to the way Chan Jones did it in the Oki package a couple years ago. But that's definitely not ideal. So hopefully we can get away with it. Hopefully Raymond still stays healthy and has a big year. But I'm going to be very nervous the whole time.
As will I, because it's Syracuse football. So I guess closing go for it, Dan.
No, I was going to say that wasn't to imply that I'm not always nervous watching Syracuse play football. It's a nerve-wracking experience.
Always, always, always. So I guess to close this out, looking at the next month or so, we're going to be here every week. Looking at the next month or so, what's kind of the big storyline for you for Syracuse Athletics? Obviously we have a new AD. Obviously football season's around the corner, but what's the big thing that you're going to be focused on? That can be any sport, any person. Just what really kind of rises to the top for you as an SU fan?
Just seeing how Coyle steps in. He's taking over, I believe, July 7th, July 6th, July 7th, one of those days. Seeing what he, has to say, what he does in his first couple months. Obviously, I don't expect him to make any huge decisions before he gets comfortable, but it'll just be interesting to see how the entire athletic department kind of rallies around him and how it functions differently than what we've been accustomed to the last few years. And then football recruiting, I think, Syracuse has quietly become a bigger player in the recruiting ground. It hasn't always meant that we've been beating teams out for big time guys, but it seems like we're at least involved in more races than we have been in the last 6 or 7 years. We just landed in the top 10 for a 4-star receiver out of New Jersey, Brad Hawkins, today, along with Auburn, Michigan, Oregon, a bunch of others, Rutgers. A number of other big programs and peer programs. So it seems like we're getting more involved in those races, even if we don't win them. That's good to see. And I think a lot of these, people have complained about some of the assistant coach hires that we've made in the last couple of years. I can say that Bobby Acosta is worth his weight in gold right now. He might be as effective for us so far in his tenure as George McDonald was. And he was not the acclaimed recruiter that McDonald was coming in. So I think, maybe Joe Adam wasn't the most attractive hire, and people have questions about him and some of the other guys. But I think Acosta's been incredible for what he's stepped into and where he's coming from. And it just seems like he's connecting to recruits really well. And it's been proven just by the fact that they seem to be giving him new territories all the time. So I think Syracuse football, there's a lot there. The on-the-field stuff, the upcoming fall will be interesting, and we're all a bit, on edge about that. But I'm really hoping that things work out on the field, because it seems like the staff is starting to put it together in terms of recruiting. But obviously, you can only go so far with that without results. So hopefully they give us a reason to want them to stick around.
Oh, completely. And, you brought up Bobby Acosta. I thought that was a great point. We did, kind of wasn't a huge feature, but it was an article a couple months back about just how important he is to the Syracuse football staff, especially as we continue to tread into New Jersey and really do continue to get into bigger and bigger races. I mean, you obviously want to win them, and we are winning some of them. I mean, look at Culpeper and Washington in particular. Finding ourselves involved in these 4-star kids who aren't from New York State, so it's not that like courtesy local program nod that we might have fallen victim to in the past with some New York State kids. It's definitely great to see that uptick. But like you said, without the on-field results, you kind of fall into a bit of a Mike London type rut. of okay, like now that you have all these you know top kids on campus, and for him it was even more talented players than what we're currently taking in, though that could change. You know, like where are the wins? And again, I think that this might be the most important SU football season in recent memory. Maybe the most important since, geez, probably the year after McNabb left. I mean, we're just we're at a crossroads, and this year could decide long-term trajectory. And for what it's worth, and I hope it's worth something, I do hope that we see more positives than negatives, and at least a 6-6 record, so that you know Scott Shaver can kind of continue his own kind of positive run that it feels like we're building on this offseason.
Absolutely, and hopefully, you know, obviously we haven't gotten much from what Coyle will think, and he probably has to review everything that's gone on, but it'll be interesting to see how he approaches it, because it's a very similar timeline to when Gross took over, and Pasqualoni obviously has way more years, and whole different story, but in terms of the time frame of coach being on the hot seat, new AD taking over, new chancellor taking over, kind of similar, although the program's in very different spots. So it'll be going to be an intriguing one. I think Syracuse football, at least since Robinson left, has always been that. We haven't really known what to expect on a year-to-year basis. So if that trend keeps up, I think we'll actually be in for some good things, because I know we're not all overly optimistic this will be a great season, but those tend to be the ones that Syracuse seems to come out of nowhere for.
Agreed. I very much hope that any negative thoughts I might have right now are dead wrong. And I think that's a good place to wrap. Dan, thanks as always for hopping on. Much appreciated.
Yeah, happy to do it. Happy to talk to all these fun things that have been going on.
Agreed. For everybody listening at home, en route to work, at work, wherever you may be, thanks for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. We're here each and every week. Be sure to rate us, like us, review us, star us, whatever it is, on Blog Talk, and most importantly on iTunes. Those things actually do help us out. And we'll see you next week. Go Orange.